Right. Well, welcome back. This is another podcast for the Undergraduate Research Council. We are hoping to introduce as many of our professors to you as we can to give you an idea of what their research is all about and maybe some tips on how to do research. We have today Dr. Crystal Randolph, who is received her PhD in communication science and disorders from Louisiana State University, her MCD in communication science and disorders from the University of South Carolina. And it is our great privilege to have you here this morning. I sent you a set of questions that I'm talking to everyone about, and I hope you've had a chance to look them over. We don't have to go in any order, but I'm just going to start with the first one. What is your basic research area, or what areas of research have you been involved with?
All right. I have completed research in the areas of intervention, intervention and assessment. Those are two really big areas in the field of communication science and disorders, which is studied by speech language pathologist and audiologist. Since I have become a professor, I've also completed research in pedagogy. That research has been really interesting to me or for me because it's new. So it's something that I hadn't explored before becoming a professor. For the intervention studies, however, they do require the implementation of a treatment. And so that's one of the things I, you know, really like about intervention research. And when we do that type of research, we measure whether or not the treatments we implement are effective with the research participants. So we usually have what we call a control group who don't receive any treatment, and then we have an experimental group who receives the treatment, and then we compare the two at the end of the research to see did the experimental group make more progress or not.
Wonderful. It sounds really interesting. I'm curious, was there ever a project that was your favorite or your least favorite that you had to be involved in?
Yes. I think my favorite project thus far has been, since I've been working as a professor, has been a project that I completed with an undergraduate student. And this project was by far one of my favorites because when he came to me, he sat down and said, "Okay, I want to do research." And I mean, I was excited, I was happy, but I was expecting something else, like, okay, what else? So he didn't really have anything, but he definitely knew that he wanted to do research. And so I looked at him and I said, "What are you interested in?" And out of all of the things that he could have said, he was like, "Photography." I'm like, "Well, wow, speech and photography. Now, how are we going to make that meld?" But I sent him on a mission to do some research, and I did some research as well to kind of help him figure out how we could combine the two topics. And it ended up being a really, really great experience because he presented his research, of course, at the Undergraduate Research Symposium, but then he also presented it at two national conventions and won awards for both of them. And the most exciting thing that happened is that at one of our national conventions, a professor from Arizona State University's doctoral program gave him extended an invite for him to apply to the doctoral program. So he was excited about that. And
wow.
I was excited about that. So
that is wonderful. That is so much fun. I love hearing that, because I know I get excited when students get that far, but to get an invitation like that, that just doesn't happen. You know, that's wonderful. That is so cool. And I'd like to go to Arizona. Nice and warm. So were there any that you really didn't like, or any problems or obstacles that you've had in your research that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Probably my least favorite when it came to the research. Well, first of all, let me say as a caveat, I love research. Like, I would do research in any area with anyone. But of course, I'm bound by my knowledge and my skill set. But with the research that I've completed so far, my least favorite would probably be the pedagogical research. And that's because I haven't done it before. And so when I complete these projects and I look back at the methodology and the outcomes, I'm like, that wasn't right. I shouldn't have done it that way. So I'm making mistakes along the way that, to me, there's not a whole lot I can do with the data. However, I can't do a lot with the data in terms of publishing a manuscript or things of that nature, but it has allowed me to learn more about my teaching style. I've learned more about students because of this research. So I wouldn't say it was a complete fail, but it hasn't been a highlight of my research career.
Yeah, I think sometimes students get the idea that when we go to research, everything's a success, that we go through and we start research and sure enough, something comes out of it. But there are many times, myself included, I think everybody, where we start something and it ends up not going where we thought it would go, or maybe it goes nowhere. I found myself, I was working on an article only to find that basically it had already been done, you know, and I didn't have anything to add.
Yeah, and we have to add something. So when that happens, it's disappointing, but it also can be motivational because you can kind of use that as a stepping stone to help you figure out how to do future projects.
Exactly. I think that for me, it's never the case that it's wasted effort because you never know where it's going to pop back up and where you'll be able to use it.
No, certainly not. And even with that failed research, there were some concepts and ideas that came up where I'm like, oh, now, if I were to extend this research or if I were to take these concepts and study them, then I may have something that could be shared and could add on to the literature in our field of study. So
that's wonderful. That's wonderful advice for students, too, to graduate students or undergrad, to realize that, yeah, There's other ways we could possibly go if we look at this as, well, it didn't work the way I wanted it to, but in the future, here's a possible angle on this. I like that.
It's funny you mentioned that because I had a dissertation defense this morning, and the first thing the student said was, well, I didn't get the positive results that I thought, and I'm like, well, that doesn't really matter because the results that you got shows us that, you know, if we work with students in this way, that this doesn't work. So no one has to waste time doing it this way again. So that helps because
yeah,
it can also tell us what not to do.
Exactly. I learned this probably more from my failures than I do from my successes. Successes are easy. Failures, you have to analyze. So do you have any strategies that you use to overcome the obstacles in your research?
Since I enjoy intervention research, the biggest obstacle for me is finding participants that will commit to the length of a study. That's always a challenge. However, sometimes I can apply for grants are monies that can pay them, and money is motivational. It will help. It will help the people come, and it will make the people stay. Other obstacles that I have in doing that type of research is the time commitment, because you have to be hands-on with the research participants. I don't always have the time to do that. Fortunately, in some cases, students will step up and say, oh, I want to be a part of this research project. And so if you train me, then I will implement the intervention. And so when that happens, that helps me to overcome that particular obstacle. But it's always a grind in intervention research because you're dealing with people and people change, people are different. So there's always going to be that dynamic.
Yeah. Well, maybe for our listeners, you could explain what intervention research is and kind of give an idea of how long it takes for a study for you, because a lot of people really don't know what goes on in communication sciences. They have these strange ideas. It's just about giving speeches or something along that line. So maybe you could give us a little detail.
Oh, yes. I love to dispel that myth of speeches. So in our field of study, we treat individuals with a range of disorders, from having difficulty producing speech sounds, not having the ability to understand language, so understanding what people are saying around them, or even being able to produce language effectively. We also work with individuals who have swallowing disorders, in cases where they may have had a stroke and their swallowing mechanism may be impaired. In addition to swallowing disorders, an individual who has had a stroke may also have cognitive impairments, and so we target that. We also, it's a long list of things. We have a running joke in our field that we can't put what we do on a badge ever. So we also treat individuals with voice disorders. So if you've ever had a harsh or hoarse voice that is consistent and doesn't go away, we can treat that. And we treat fluency disorders, so individuals who may have difficulty with stuttering. So when it comes to intervention, we will provide treatments for all of those issues. My particular area of study focus on language difficulties, speech sound difficulties, and literacy difficulties. So the intervention studies that I do all are aimed at helping those individuals to increase those skills so that they are better communicators.
Oh, that's wonderful. So how would you go about helping? Is there someone with a literacy disorder, for example? Can you give a quick example? That may not be possible, but.
Oh, sure. Specifically, my area is I work with younger children, so that pre-K, 3 to 5 years old. And so interventions that we implement with them are include phonological awareness instruction. So we teach them how to rhyme, how to identify sounds in words just based on hearing them, how to segment the sounds in a word. So for example, if I give the child the word cat, then a phonemic awareness task may require them to tell me, well, what sounds do you hear in that particular word? And so research that has been done has proven that teaching these skills will help to enhance a child's ability to read and write.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that, but that makes sense. Yeah.
I think this is particularly interesting, but maybe it's because it's my interest, but one of the links that they found that helped to solidify the role that phonological awareness plays in reading is they did research on illiterate adults and found that was the missing component that they all shared. They lacked phonological awareness skills.
Oh, wow. That is interesting. Because I would think that if we know that, then it's going to be much easier to treat, especially older people who are illiterate. We all get sort of set in our ways. But if we actually know a component to that, it seems like we could build that in to make it less frustrating.
Oh, for sure. And when we think about reading and writing, I mean, we're manipulating sounds. We're putting them together, we're taking them apart, and that's what phonological awareness is all about.
That's wonderful. I actually have a grandson who is in speech therapy right now. He's in kindergarten. He has troubles with his L's and his R's. And I've noticed a big difference in him as he's gone through this therapy with just how much he enjoys learning more now that he gets those sounds right.
Yes. And it can be daunting for a child. Sometimes you may not think that, you know, that can cause stress on a child, but children sometimes may be mean. And so, I mean, he may be being teased. You never know. One of the other tasks that we have as SLPs is to kind of go into classrooms and do training, not only with teachers, but with other children as well. And to teach them that, you know, some of our friends different, so they may say words in this way, but here's how we can help them.
Oh, that's wonderful. I like that. I didn't know you did that either, and that's great. Anything we can do to get them to understand diversity, I think, is wonderful. Going on to another question that I have that I've been asking everyone, do you have a style in which you research? Like, for me, my favorite part is the research. But then when I sit down to write, so when I research, I collect everything I can find and read everything from all the different disciplines about my topic. But then when I sit down to write, I just sit down and I want to write it all at once. So my family has come to learn not to jump in when I'm writing because I'm concentrating. Do you have a favorite part of research or a strategy that you use when you research?
My attention doesn't span for a very long time. And so a lot of my writing, I don't know if this will seem weird or not, but a lot of my writing occurs in my head. I have to think about it first. And when I'm sitting and I'm staring off into space and I'm not listening to your conversation, but you're talking to me, I'm usually writing my manuscript in my head. And it just works better for me that way because I have a hard time just sitting in front of the computer and just writing all at once. I wish I had that skill, but I don't. So I'll kind of make an outline, you know, in my mind of what I want it to look like, what it should sound like. And I kind of take in information. I read through a few articles. And of course, one of the things that I do when reading the articles, because I dislike doing the referencing. So I will go ahead and start cataloging those. I actually use Microsoft Word to catalog my references and to set my citations. So that's useful. So that's what I'll usually do. And as I'm pulling those concepts, I will just categorize them in my mind. And then when I'm ready to write, then I'm not just staring like at a blank screen with a blank head. I actually have things and they stick with me. I don't know how that happens, but they stick and then I can write.
That sounds wonderful. I wish I had more of that. My way tends to make a lot of revisions. I end up revising over and over just so many times. It sounds like your way, maybe you're able to get it more in your head and visually so that when you go to write it, maybe you don't have as many revisions to do.
Right. And that's the manuscript is probably the part that I hate the most. I know that it has to be done, but it's just time consuming. It's different guidelines for different journals, and it's very tedious. But usually what I spend my time with, this is going to be strange coming from a speech language pathologist, is the data. Like, I love looking at the data, the numbers, analyzing them, looking for patterns. And so I can become overly obsessed with that part of research. I love it. I wouldn't say I'm that great at it, but I'm good enough to get done what I need to have done. So that's my favorite part. I like to see, let me look at the results. Let me see the data. Let me see what the numbers say.
Yeah. It actually, it's more fun for me too. I don't mind writing the manuscript. What I really don't like is editing it. I have to force myself to do it, just like our students. But it has to be done.
It has to be done. I think it's an ego thing because I'm like, there's no way I could have gotten this wrong. This is right. This is right the first time.
Yeah. No, I'm always going back going, well, is this word better or is that word better? And I will spend forever thinking of that, which I'm sure is a terrible waste of time.
But here's what I've been using to help me with that, Grammarly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
That has helped me tremendously. And I also changed the settings in Microsoft Office, in Microsoft Word, so that it checks for both grammar and style.
Maybe I can set it to do commas. I have to laugh. I'm old enough that when I was taught commas back in the 70s and 80s in college, they did it completely differently, and now they've changed them. And so I have to go back and continue to look. Am I doing it the old way or the new way?
Yes, you can set commas, so that will be useful for you.
I may try that just to make sure, because I keep getting them back from the publisher going, this is a really old style. It's like, yeah, really old. So. Well, I do have one last question, and that is, what advice would you give to students about research?
I would tell them to kind of follow the path of that one student that came to my office and said, I want to do research. You don't really have to know what you want to do, but if you start the conversation, find a professor or find a mentor that you're comfortable with. Of course, you don't want to work with someone you're not comfortable with, because you'll be spending a lot of time with that person. So another thing that I like to do as a part of my classroom content is to dispel myths that students have about research, about it being hard, about it being difficult. I want them to be able to appreciate research and what it provides for us, and to also understand that it doesn't have to be a daunting task. It can be simple, and it can be something that you enjoy doing, and you can kind of meld it with the interest in the field that you're studying.
That's lovely. I can't imagine anyone being able to say that better. I do love that. Research is fun. I think it's addictive to me once I start, but it's fun.
Yes, it is fun. I mean, I walk around, and when I'm around people, I'm like, oh, that could be a research study.
Yeah.
So keep a recorder. We have smartphones now. So start your smartphone, and when you hear or think of something, then just hit record, record it, and then come back to it later. But be sure to come back to it later.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Well, I have had a wonderful time talking to you. Do you have anything you'd like to add before? I mean, this has been wonderful, and I'm sure students are going to love listening to it. You've given a lot of good information and good tricks. Is there any last advice you have?
No last advice, other than don't be afraid to do research. It doesn't have to be perfect the first time. Find someone you like and just tell them, I want to do research.
I like that. I really like that. I hope all of our students will. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with us today and to talk with us. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
I have as well.
Good. Well, thank you. And I hope you have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.